Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. We are the program that shares information so we can live longer, healthier lives, that exposes the truth. No matter what the political or economic consequences, we're going to tell you what is. And by the way, today's music is for Jay Black. I was not aware, but just a few days ago, he passed. I believe he was in his early 80s, 83, 84. I remember seeing him 20 years ago at a concert that he gave with Jay and the Americans out at the Westbury Music Festival. Went out there a lot, and there were a bunch of us went out from the running club. And I remember it surprised me because he had all white hair, long, clear down to his shoulders. And afterwards I asked, you know, my friends, what do you think? They had a beautiful voice. Yes, he had a beautiful voice. He'd been around a long time. And it's always sad to see people who've contributed something that gives us joy, that brings back memories. So all the cuts today will be from him. But then it inspired me last night. I was thinking, think of all the other great voices we've had, the melodies, the lyrics, the groups, and how few of them are still around today. How few people from then in the 1960s and 70s are even alive, let alone performing. And why can't they? Who says at a certain point your music's no longer viable, and what could that mean to change your music or your writing or film producing, anything in any field? So I'm going to spend the next month, I've already selected the music yesterday with Rodney in the studio, and so we're going to take you back over a period of years. And the closest other person I could say that could match Jay Black was Roy Orbison. Some say Frankie Valli. He didn't have that range. Good singer, didn't have that range. And also, I'm going to do a little analysis, just a little hobby I have, where I look at groups, how long were they productive, what caused them to end, and then I imagine what would happen if they hadn't broken up, if the Beatles hadn't broken up. What would have happened? I think we have one example of what's possible with the Bee Gees, but I'm going to get into that. It's just a little hobby of mine. Today, you're going to learn about drinking matcha tea can reduce anxiety from Kumamoto University in Japan. Also today, I'm going to read a letter that I sent to Noam Chomsky last evening. I'm also going to read a letter from a close friend of mine who was concerned about Jimmy Dore's heavy-handed approach in calling him out on, in effect, wanting a two-tier society, the very thing that he proselytized against. And also even today, RT went after Chomsky. And I believe that everyone should just stop for a moment, because it's going overboard and it's taking it out of context. If you want to say someone erred, fine, he did. But don't try to destroy a giant's legacy who spent 70 years of a career, I think he's 93 or so, helping us, guiding us, fighting our battles, when a lot of liberals were doing demonstrations in a safe position. He was out there getting arrested. He was putting his head right on the chopping block. He had the FBI and everyone else against him. That takes courage. You don't erase that legacy of doing good simply because you're not up to date on the facts today. So I'm going to read you the letter I sent him. Plus, I sent him three articles with a hope that he will read the articles and hopefully readjust his position. At least this is information you will not find in what he would normally read, which would be the liberal media. And Richard Gale is going to come on to talk about what the hell has happened to the liberal community, of which so many of us have been members. Now you have people defending the CIA, defending our wars overseas, defending the Department of Defense's budget, bloated as it is, defending apartheid, vaccine apartheid. So I want to go on the record very clear and unequivocal. You have a right to do anything you want, say anything you want. I can disagree with it. That doesn't make you a bad person for being on the wrong side of an issue. But how do you know you're on the wrong side of an issue? How do you know that you're sharing misinformation that then is feeding into a larger scheme to weaponize a protocol? We're going to deal with that specifically. And it's interesting because I'll show you the groups that historically have been on the liberal side of all issues, and today they're being attacked for defending those liberal issues by liberals who are attacking progressive liberals. We're seeing corporate liberals in control. So we should have that conversation. And we don't have to demonize anyone in the process. Just open, civil conversation. That's our program. Let's begin. Drinking matcha tea. Now, if you're not familiar with matcha tea, it's not a sweet tea. It's kind of a slightly bitter tea, but it's extremely beneficial. In fact, if you go back to 1906, there was a book written called The Book of Tea. And it was written by a Japanese scholar, Okura Kakazu. And he said, quote, tea began as a medicine and grew into a beverage. With that simple yet profound statement, Okura succinctly explained why green tea has long been celebrated as both a soothing refreshment and a health-boosting tonic. So researchers at the Kumamoto University study green tea's beneficial properties, and specifically, can it calm the mind? And they published it in the peer-reviewed Journal of Functional Foods. The study examined the stress-reducing function of matcha tea and in clinical trials, and there is a nutrient within the green tea. You don't want the caffeinated part, but this is called L-theanine, T-H-E-A-N-I-N-E. It's an amino acid, and it's been shown to exhibit really good stress-reducing effects in humans, generally 200 milligrams. So yes, it works, and yes, because of theanine. So you can take that by itself or drink the tea, but try to get decaffeinated. From Arizona State University comes a study about autism, but a different approach. The College of Health Solutions, a professor there, found that mindfulness on the quality of life, your own and those you work with, allows you not to be so stressed when dealing with something that's not controllable. And I can tell you from first-person experience that some of my closest friends have parents suffering from advanced Alzheimer's or autism. And unfortunately, they didn't pay attention to someone who was in the studies they were in, but they didn't complete them. This person did, and he's 97, and he's had remarkable changes. He would have been gone years ago. So if you have an example, let's put it this way. If you have 100,000 false sightings of UFO and you find one that's real, then you've proven they're real. And it's, and we have to take that axiom across. So if I have, you know, one person that has slowed down Alzheimer's or dementia, so it didn't go to an advanced stage and begin to bring back some of the qualities of life, then it shows it can be done. Now, yeah, you can say, well, let's do a big study, and I would agree. We had the protocols, but the mere fact that we are reversing diseases that historically medicine has never been able to reverse shows that we should be paying more attention to what are the ingredients. What's the protocol? And that's where we have to see, is society open-minded enough, or the professional class open-minded enough, to allow something into that highly structured, profoundly disciplined mind. You don't become a professional by being lazy. It takes focus and discipline, but along the way, if you become more open, as you become more of a master of your field, then you're open to other ideas. There's nothing worse when orthodoxy becomes science, or I should say, when orthodoxy overtakes science. So when a doctor or scientist says, well, this is what it is, and you say, but there could be other approaches, and they say, no, it's this is what it is, then you no longer have good medicine or good science or good public health. That's what we have today. But in this study, they found that mindful meditation helped you as a person and then helped you deal with autism. Now, I did a big clinical study with lots of people on autism years ago, and the children were bouncing off the walls. And you could see how frustrated the parents were. There was no yelling. They were just trying to keep their kids calm enough. that the parents could learn from the class and apply it, and it was working, changing the diet. Something as simple as getting the sugar, all sugars, except for that which is in a natural fruit, like eating an apple. That's natural fructose. But all other sugars, especially artificial sweeteners, out of the diet. Then getting all caffeinated beverages, carbonated beverages, out of the diet. Getting all known cerebral allergic reactions from dairy, wheat, out of the diet. And suddenly, what had been an autistic child for years became a calm child. Then the rebuilding of the brain, and with the different glycerol, phosphoryl nutrients, and phosphatidylcholine, acetyl-L-carnitine, etc. And now suddenly, in a period of about 6 months, with a six-month follow-up, you start to see completely normal behavior, and then one day, boom, my kid's normal. So you see, we need to look at every single thing that works as only one piece of a puzzle. The more pieces we have to pull into that puzzle, the more clear the picture that we're trying to create becomes. And that's why I'm not a believer in the single approach of, you know, just do one thing. No, you do a lot of different things, and that's where you get your greatest advantage. And that worked in this case, so good for them. This was published in the current Journal of Quality of Life Research. Also, from the Medical University of South Carolina, as well as Johns Hopkins University, comes a study showing medicinal cannabis products can help with depression and improve quality of life. Now, I've advocated for my entire career three things in this area. One, it is a crime against humanity to continue any war on drugs. It is purely a profiteering political compromise for corporations that are individuals who are involved in it. And frequently these people are ideologues. They're, for example, the conservatives and Republicans can't stand the thought that maybe we should not have a war on drugs. Instead, ask simple questions. Why would a person take a drug? And what happens when they do take a drug? Do you want to punish them by prison and ruin their life? Or do you want to help them rehabilitate without that drug? And are you going to consider smoking not a drug? It's as addictive as any drug, and we now know that. So you don't put a person in prison for that, but you put them in for marijuana. And yet there's no medicinal value in a cigarette, but there's huge medicinal value in cannabinoids for seizures, for stroke, for glioblastomas, astrocytomas, for the different things that can happen in a brain and central nervous system. And this is not theoretical. There are over 20,000 articles in the Library of Medicine on this, and yet none of the politicians who are opposed to decriminalization have ever read any of these, nor would they want to. They're not going to take any information in to challenge their preconceived biases. But we have to know. I mean, look, give a dog or a cat cannabinoids, especially those suffering from seizures in old age, and watch the difference. So first you get rid of the war on drugs. Then you set up centers in every community in the world that has a problem. And that's the proper way to spend public money, to help the public rehabilitate, both emotionally and physically. And then third, open up all the prisons and let everyone who's been in prison for a drug-related problem, not if they've killed someone, no, that's different. But if they've been using, and that's the vast majority, let them out and expunge their records. That's a humane and holistic way of approaching it. None of the above have any of the so-called progressive presidents from Clinton and Clinton, they were a tag team match, and Barack Obama. So these are all people that promise one thing and don't give a damn about you on the other. And yet when they write in their own memoirs that they use drugs, there seems to be no irony. So you're putting people in prison at the same time that you've written a book talking about how you didn't go to prison, you used the same drugs. And yet we just can't come to grips with that. Finally, from the Karolinska Institute, which is one of the finest institutes in the world in Sweden, they found that breastfeeding is linked to a lower risk of type 1 diabetes. That's terrific. So breastfeeding is terrific. This was published in the Biomedicine Journal. And that's going to help a lot of people every year. All right. So that's the latest on health and healing. And by the way, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, just came up with a study about how diets affect tumors. A new study finds cutting off cell supplies of lipids can slow the growth of tumors. Well, think of all the fats we eat that are unhealthy, trans fats in your French fries and in your pizza crust and donuts and muffins and pretzels, potato chips. And then think of all the fats from arachidonic acid fats from meats. Cut all that out and watch the difference. We are 18 minutes into the program. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to, I'm going to read the letter to Noam Chomsky, and with the hope that he reads it and reads the attachments that we sent. And then I'm going to play you a clip. Now, a little background. Please go to prn.fm, scroll down so you can watch the woman, because she's in a huge theater. I'm guessing there's probably 2,000 to 3,000 people, and those are nurses and medical doctors, principally. She's a nurse, and she wore her outfit that she wore when she was at the heart of the COVID pandemic emergency reactions at the beginning, her stethoscope, her outfit. And she tells her story. And we're not hearing that story from those who are the pro-vaccine. And if you're pro-vaccine, good. Take the vaccines. I have no problem with you taking a vaccine. It's your right. My only hope is, have you done your homework? And if you have, are you taking the CDC, the FDA, the New York Times, Washington Post, Rachel Maddow, you're taking their advice? Because that's not going to help you. Look for the truth before you decide who should have control over the sanctity of your body. And I fully support the police officers, the firefighters, the nurses, the school teachers who have chosen on this vaccine. And by the way, the vast majority of these people are all pro-vaccine, but they're seeing firsthand, a lot of them, especially the doctors, nurses, orderlies, and family members, of the consequences of being lied to and the side effects, the unnecessary deaths, and the lies upon lies upon lies. So if you're not a doctor, nurse, or healthcare worker, if you haven't seen the consequences of what happens when a person trusts the government completely, then you won't have the same perspective. Because I work with people who are terminally ill all the time, it gives me a different perspective on the meaning of quality of life. Because I'm in one-to-one communication with these people. When I help people with COVID, the same thing. And by the way, anyone who listened to this program and chose to use the protocols and it helped them or a family member deal with COVID, let us know. 888-874-4888. Or if you listen to this program and you chose not to use any of this information and you got COVID, how did that work out for you? I'd like to hear from both sides. But you're going to hear from one side that I absolutely guarantee you no network will play. No one will invite them on. No one will invite this nurse on or the thousands of doctors who are in that room. And by the way, you are aware that there are tens of thousands, actually hundreds of thousands of people the federal government has exempted from taking vaccines. All members of Congress and their staff. Yeah. So are you going to say anyone who didn't take the vaccine is a deplorable or a domestic terrorist in attitude? Are you condemning those people as well? Are you condemning members of Congress? Are you condemning their staff, the CDC and its staff? Take a look, the FDA and its staff. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. This is a letter I sent to Professor Chomsky. Dear Professor Chomsky, please take a moment to read this letter and the accompanying attachments. I was deeply concerned over the insensitive manner in which Jimmy Dore and other commentators took to criticize your stance on the COVID-19 vaccines. I have followed your work since my early days as a college student during the anti-war and civil rights protests of the 1960s, and later your writings, your book, Manufacturing Consent, has been a guidebook for over the years in my personal syndicated national broadcast and my criticisms of the mainstream media's limitations or biases. Later, I used some of your material in the college courses I taught as an adjunct professor at Fairleigh Dickinson University. What I always highlighted was your deep scholarship, intellectual acumen, and historically being on the correct side of the most pressing issues of our time. However, your recent comments are unfortunately inaccurate. Not only yours, but also many of those among us who espouse liberal values. Seemingly the entire liberal media, including Amy Goodman, have been in error and responsible for promulgating scientifically misleading information. Therefore, I was perplexed that you would defend the very institutional structures and their biases, which have betrayed us repeatedly in history, that you have made a career to challenge. My own background is in human nutrition and public health science. I hold a doctorate and a senior research fellow position at the Institute of Applied Biology for over 3 decades. I've counseled tens of thousands of people and conducted over 50 important clinical studies related to chronic health and illness. So public health is an area that I'm more than familiar with. When Anthony Fauci and other federal health officials began making very misleading statements about COVID-19, which independent reviews have found to be based on very shoddy scientific research and analysis, it drew my attention. I've attached several articles co-written with my producer, Richard Gale, who is a former senior research analyst in the biotech and genomic industries, that provide alternative scenarios with scientific citations, and these are independent scientific citations. It is widely accepted that the vaccinated are not protected from contracting the SARS-2 virus. This has been stated clearly by the vaccine makers and is clearly written in the manufacturer's product insert information. Over 100,000 physicians and medical researchers worldwide, including one of the inventors of the RNA vaccine technology, Dr. Robert Malone, are formally challenging the official narrative about the efficacy and safety of these experimental vaccines. These are all doctors who, like myself, are pro-vaccine, but are deeply concerned about these new experimental COVID vaccines because there is unsound clinical evidence to determine, as of yet, their safety, let alone whether they work or not. These doctors, therefore, adhering to the precautionary principle, which has been upheld as a gold standard for questionable medical intervention before the pandemic. Medical professionals are risking their reputations to now warn that more children will die from these vaccines than from the COVID infection. Physicians, scientists, highly educated parents who choose to avoid vaccination are now being labeled a threat to society and no better than a terrorist. In fact, there is no evidence whatsoever that the virus is a matter of grave concern for children. The assumption being made by the federal agencies is that vaccinated children will protect the adults. However, there's absolutely no proof whatsoever to substantiate this claim because there is still a great deal of controversy over whether an asymptomatic person with the virus can transmit it to others easily. If we look at Israel as an example, the most vaccinated nation in the world, which has started to administer a fourth booster shot, the hospitals are filling up with COVID patients who are fully vaccinated. Recently in Europe, a suit has been filed by 1,000 attorneys and 10,000 medical professionals against the World Health Organization, the CDC, and the World Economic Forum, based upon the Nuremberg Code criteria. Another lawsuit is underway in which U.S. Against the CDC and the Fauci National Institutes of Allergies and Infectious Disease for manipulating and massaging the data in the CDC's vaccine adverse events reporting system to reduce the evidence that the vaccines are causing enormous injuries and deaths. A federal whistleblower in the suit has estimated that the vaccines have caused approximately 40,000 American deaths already. If we consider the European Union's Eurovigilance Adverse Event Vaccine Reporting Monitoring System, which is far more robust and accurate than the CDC's VAERS based upon a Harvard review, then we're looking at over 27,000 deaths in the United States minimally due to the vaccine and 2.5 million vaccine injuries, many of those permanent. What is worrisome, and that's in Europe, I should say, what is worrisome is that over 90% of COVID deaths were among the elderly with comorbidities. The CDC's own website states that only 6%, let me repeat this, only 6% of deaths was actually caused by the virus alone. The remainder with comorbidity complications, whereas we are observing more vaccination deaths in younger age groups than from the actual virus. Yet none of this is being reported by the mainstream media. It is a classical example of manufacturing consent to implement a narrative that is grossly compromised by commercial and perhaps political interest. So I would encourage you to please examine the literature and articles carefully and reflect upon the facts that are being intentionally ignored and denied by our health officials and by the media. If after reviewing the information you feel morally compelled to revise your earlier statements, many of us will be grateful. But no matter your decision, your legacy will remain as one of America's greatest political and social justice warriors, however, perhaps not on the matter of medical science and immunology. I appreciate your consideration. Sincerely, Gary Noll, PhD. Now, I sent them three articles. You can go to GaryNoll.com and download these. Also, you can go to PRN.fm, and we are also posting them. Of all the nearly 30 articles written this last year and a half, or a little over, I'll tell you the titles of the articles. The first one is called The Fortress of Lies to Censor Truth About COVID-19, Richard Gell and myself, and this was published July 21st this year. I'll just read you a paragraph here. We continue to make efforts to remind people who are most concerned about the life and death issues regarding the SARS pandemic that the ruling establishment keenly knows the average person's weaknesses and the means to capitalize on those weaknesses to strengthen its control over the agenda. And control over the nation's media is paramount for tightening its grip on our thoughts, emotions, and beliefs. We tend to believe journalists, not because we expect them to accurately fact-check their statements. More often than not, the average person simply assumes the media source would not publish something that is untrue. However, underneath these widespread assumptions, there lurks this nefarious beast called calling the shots. There was a time, not too long ago, when the insights of honest journalists, such as Cy Hirsch, Robert Perry, Chris Hedges, Glenn Greenwald, Cheryl Atkinson, among others, were accessible to all. They had multiple popular media platforms, including the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the major mega television networks, to challenge those in power, whether Democrat or Republican, without fear of vindictive reprisal. Now, it is not uncommon to find these same dissenting voices vilified daily over the media waves and throughout the internet, including on Wikipedia. If they declare their innocence, they nevertheless remain guilty for life. Google gives assurance that their voices are buried in the new officialdom's gulag for the guilty. There is evidence that the censorship pandemic launched against those questioning the official unfolding SARS-2 story was underway before April of last year. Jack McCannigan, director of the Copenhagen human rights think tank, Justiça, reported in the journal Foreign Policy that governments worldwide were weaponizing laws to curtail the spread of the virus. In 2019, the BBC launched the birth of an international media network dedicated to combating and censoring news and stories that challenged and exposed the corruption within the corporate left, mainstream news reporting, and the multilateral organizations with whom the liberal governments had aligned themselves. Few people are aware of the Trusted News Initiative, TNI, a consortium of mega news and tech companies with the sole mission to target individuals and groups for censorship. Largely funded by the BBC, which can be read as the British government, the Trusted News Initiative, TNI, members include media giants such as Associated Press, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, Reuters, the European Broadcasting Union, Agency France, Financial Times, New York Times, The Washington Post, LA Times, among others. Silicon Valley partners include Google, YouTube, Facebook, Microsoft, First Draft, and Twitter. Last year, the initiative, along with The New York Times, created Project Origin, quote, an early warning system of rapid alerts, end quote, that targets information questioning government policies in their handling of the pandemic. The reporting about COVID vaccine injuries and deaths, SARS-2 origin, the statements and the interviews by thousands of Orthodox medical physicians advocating for highly effective off-patent drugs such as ivermectin and the risks of the experimental vaccines, in other words, anything contrary to what comes out of the mouths of the CDC, the World Health Organization, the British Health Ministry, and other governmental health bodies, is to be silenced. Facebook and Google, according to the RARE Foundation, ensure that targeted information is blocked and not republished. The TNI clearly advocates authoritarian control over the Internet. It doesn't conceal its anti-democratic mission. A press release states that TNI will censor, quote, widely shared memes which link falsehoods about vaccines to freedom and individual liberties, end quote. The duplicity in this goal is obvious. Little else is known about TNI. The initiative largely operates in total secrecy. Now, whenever you come across a news story beginning with TNI, in parentheses, you'll know its source and goals to feed you sanitized propaganda. If you do not find your most pressing questions and deep concerns being adequately answered, or simply answered with vague platitudes rather than scientific evidence, you'll know the reason why. By the way, that's just the beginning of the article we sent Chomsky. We sent him another article entitled Playing Russian Roulette with COVID-19 Vaccine. We sent him another one on how the architects of the COVID pandemic lost touch with reality. And those are just some of the many that we have written. And so now I want to also read you something from my friend Steve Brown. He said about yesterday's program, good comment. I'd already watched that particular session of the Jimmy Dore show, and though he was correct in pointing out the fact that Chomsky didn't know what he was talking about, I cringed at the violence of his attack and the wave after wave of undeserved contempt he unleashed on someone who has accomplished so much and put himself personally at risk so often during his 90-plus years in order to discover and proclaim the truth, almost always in principled opposition to those who would distort or deny the truth for personal advantage or the imposition of ideological conformity. Chomsky's position reflected the surprising fact that he and most of the left, who reflexively never believe anything that the government or corporate interests say about anything without first getting independent verification, have embraced totally and without question everything the government and corporate interest have said about COVID-19, including the need for mandatory global vaccination, is the only way to fight it. But I can understand their acceptance of the official position, since never before in the long history of manufacturing consent by the ruling elite have so many supposedly benign public institutions, so many elected officials, so many respected authority figures from science, medicine, academia, and the entertainment industry come together so quickly and so unanimously on a single issue, with virtually the entire media universe echoing and amplifying their consensus, not only in the expected corporate news outlets, but also in such left-wing icons as Democracy Now!, Mother Jones, and The Nation. How one could have to wonder, could so many people be so wrong about something so important? Maybe this time we'll get it right. So thank you, Steve Brown, for your concern on that. Now we're going to go to a clip before we go to Richard Gale. And this clip, again, if you can go up to prn.fm, scroll down to the left side. That's where I put all my notes every day. But here you're going to see a person. And she was in the front lines. And by the way, isn't it interesting? All of our so-called heroes who were in the front line for this whole time, risking their lives, now they're relegated to contempt and losing their jobs and careers without actually asking them, why are you not accepting the vaccine? As if none of them have a legitimate reason, no medical reason that it would be acceptable. And yet at least 130 million Americans have a legitimate medical reason not to be vaccinated with this vaccine. because they have autoimmune conditions that could be exacerbated. There's no study on that. So you're really playing Russian roulette and avoiding the precautionary principle. And what about all the people who have been infected and therefore have a very robust and healthy immune response, making them less susceptible to a second infection or less of a severe infection? They're not considered. So when you're wiping away legitimate reasons for your doctor say you don't need this vaccine, and you're saying no one has a legitimate reason for anything, then you've gone beyond science, you've gone beyond medicine, you've gone beyond public health. You're fully in a ideological state, and you're weaponizing your tools against these people. And let's remember, when you start realizing how many people are going to lose their jobs, and by the way, the Mayo Clinic just came out today showing how many of its employees are going to be losing their job. And by the way, the latest study that just came out this morning, quote, 1 in 4 COVID patients hospitalized while vitamin D deficient die. This is an Israeli study. Quote, among those without deficiency, meaning they got plenty of vitamin C, only 3% die. Compared this, quote, if you're inefficient vitamin D, you're 14 times, that's 1,400% less, more likely to die or be in critical condition. So what have we been saying from day one? Treat early through prevention. And all of the protocols out there from all the medical doctors contain vitamin D, vitamin C, selenium, zinc, etc., quercetin, and not a word anywhere. And yet all that's in the peer-reviewed literature. So here's another study. So wouldn't it make sense if you just want to save people, whether they're vaccinated or not, they go into a hospital, make sure they get vitamin D. Not given. Also, quote, from major Australian supermarket chains adopt, quote, no jab, no job policy impacting hundreds of thousands of workers, over 300,000 workers in Australia. This was in today's Financial Review. Okay, let's see how that impacts people. What do you think is going to happen to the fire department and the nursing and medical staffs when they don't have enough people to deliver the services that are needed? Shouldn't someone pay attention to this? We should, but we're not. We're not looking at the unintended consequences of all this. But I believe it's up to 4,000 Mayo Clinic personnel. That means medical doctors and nurses are going to be fired. Well, why would they choose not to be vaccinated? Maybe you should talk with them. Maybe they have a position you don't have. Have you worked in, Alex, have you worked in a hospital? Have you been in the emergency room? Have you been there with COVID patients? Have you saw all literally the first 6 months, almost everything they were doing was wrong? Have you been there? But you've got a strong judgment on it. You're willing to judge people their entire life. This is just one of the people in this audience who in self-righteous indignation, and they're always with self-righteous indignation, proclaim something without any scientific basis whatsoever. Everything is politicized. Now let's hear from the nurse. Please watch it, because everyone in that audience is there to support her talking about her experience. And she's in her outfit, nurse's outfit, stethoscope, and she'll tell you that. It's a short clip, but it's meaningful, because no one wants to hear her story, or hundreds of thousands, millions of other nurses who could tell you the same story, or doctors who could tell you the same story. Why are their voices being excluded? Why is their reality and the reality they're dealing with patients, why is it not a part of any of our policymaking positions? Why is it the people who are sitting in judgment don't go into any of those places where they could risk their own life? They sit in the comfort of their corporate elite offices. Now to her.
I'm an Army combat wounded veteran, and I'm also a registered nurse in the great state of Florida with our awesome governor, Ron DeSantis. So the COVID-19 pandemic is one of the biggest threats to America, our values, and our Constitution that many of us have never faced in our lifetimes. And it's not because the virus is so deadly. It's because of the corrupt politicians and bureaucrats that have lied to you, and they have been lying to you from the beginning. I stand before you today in the same, this is the part where I just don't want to cry, but I know I'm gonna. I stand before you in the same scrubs that I wore in New York as a travel COVID ICU nurse. at Elmhurst Hospital, the epicenter of the epicenter. I stand before you today wearing the same stethoscope that listened to the final heartbeat of the patient I was unable to advocate for. The same stethoscope that heard the final dying breath of a mother, a father, a sister, a brother, a human being that didn't need to die alone in their dark, cold, and very lonely room that many of my colleagues refused to enter. Separated from their loved ones that were banned from entering this death chamber, I held their hands, I combed their hair, I talked to them, I shared stories of my children with them. I tried my best to learn. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
They were, despite the fact that they couldn't talk to me. They were all on ventilators. So there is an image that still, keeps me up at night. And it was of this half-drunken water bottle and sitting in the purse with my Spanish grandma, who was on the ventilator for 37 days, eventually dying. That was the last sip of water that she would ever take, and that was the last kiss she would give her husband after walking through the emergency room doors at Elmhurst. They vented her in the emergency room immediately, because that's what they were told to do. The treatment, they knew it was the wrong treatment. 100% of every single patient had died after being placed on a ventilator by the time I arrived in New York in April of 2020. Cuomo banned hydroxychloroquine and any other alternative treatments were looked at as crazy because they didn't work. Nothing worked, right? These patients were being drenched in paralytics and sedatives until their bodies just couldn't take it anymore. They went into multi-system organ failure and would eventually become another body stacked in the freezer trucks in the back of the hospital. It was essentially an assembly line to a body bag. The financial incentives of $13,000 to admit patients, $39,000 to put these patients on ventilators, and even incentive for COVID deaths up to $10,000 in some hospitals and nursing homes. It was the perfect storm. Remove all liability, incentivize COVID cases, create fear and order people to stay home, leading to increased sickness. Ban all alternative treatments, such as the hydroxychloroquine and zinc protocol, despite the fact that it was saving every single life at my hospital in Florida, as I went to my emergency room before I traveled to New York. If a doctor did prescribe it off-label in New York, though, they would be immediately fired and likely lose their medical license. The doctor-patient relationship was destroyed by politicians. Bypass the use of the comfort ship and Javits Center. Instead, just stuff every single patient inside the hospital's like sardines for financial kickback. Ban all autopsies. Because of all of this, and the fact that no matter how hard I tried to advocate and stop this from happening to these people, I was consistently silenced and threatened with being sent home. I ended up contacting an attorney in New York, and I went undercover inside the hospital using a pair of spy glasses, recording countless murders in real time. He ordered 30,000 ventilators in the beginning of March. How did he know to do that? He wanted to use them despite it being a death sentence. Even more scary was the fact that many of my colleagues just went along with it, and that's why we're all here today. COVID is treatable.
COVID is treatable, she is correct. And thousands of doctors and nurses have had the courage to put people on prophylaxis programs with orthodox medicine approved by the FDA for off-label use. And here's the problem. No one will ever be held accountable for at least 80% of the people who could have been helped who weren't because of politics and the control of by Fauci and others over this whole facade. So we will continue to bring you people who speak truth to power. They're just not going to ever be questioned by the mainstream. I would love to see Dr. McCullough debate anyone that the mainstream media or scientific community brings forward. And we have a list of over 100 scientists, including multiple Nobel Prize winners from Stanford, Oxford, Harvard, who will come forward and debate. But they have no platforms to debate on. Nobody wants to know their truth. And that should tell you a lot. It ultimately tells you who's in control by who you cannot criticize. Richard Gale's on the phone. Richard, we are right now just not in a pandemic of misinformation and total control, but even today or yesterday, the CDC director says that unvaccinated police, unvaccinated government workers will be sent, quote, for education and counseling, as if any decision they made not to vaccinate means that there's something emotionally wrong with them. And I'm thinking Mao's Pol Pot, Mao, and others, re-education camps, even in even the Vietnamese re-education camps. Could you imagine hundreds of thousands of employees who have legitimate reasons for saying no to this particular vaccine, even though they've gotten all their other vaccines, now having to go to special education and counseling to make them right-minded? Your thoughts, please.
Ooh, my thoughts. This is a big topic, Gary, because I think this is a consequence of listen to the science mantra, because science is immoral, or this, it's amoral. It's not immoral. It's not moral. It's an amoral thing. It's just simply observation, measurement, and there's no ethical or moral status placed on it. And if you just have a completely scientific, materialistic view of life, and we are nothing more than mechanical machines, robots, you know, that's what the body is. And so if that's going to be the paradigm, your worldview that you're going to work off, then anything could be conditioned. You just fix the machine. If you got to tweak, you know, you got to tweak some of the gears here and nuts and bolts and screws and one's behavior and attitudes and views. That's what the scientific materialistic paradigm is suggesting. And this is becoming the dominant view. This is what's being taught in the universities now in any psychology, psychiatry, or life sciences department. So what's kind of very unnerving, though, is that we're finding that the liberals, which in the past would have been the biggest critics of this kind of thing, now they're the same ones that are jumping on board on this. And you even have some of the most staunch scientific materialists, particularly like in the atheist community, they're in the liberal camp. You know, liberal journalists that are reporting on health issues, like in you know, Mother Jones, and even some on Counterpunch and The Nation, which were, you know, which I've always respected and admired. But when it's increasingly when it's coming to national health policies and issues, it's just corporate friendly. And in the past, this would never have been the case. And I think a lot of that is just, in some ways, the right is just going bonkers in so many issues, you know, concerning its allegiance with the evangelical right and, you know, creationism and a lot of things to be criticized for. But then on the other hand, when it's coming to these health issues, we find that they're the ones that are champion and really scrutinizing the available science, and are calling out the federal officials that what you're giving us is just compromised science with conflicts of interest with the private industry. And so in this count, you know, you can, they're on the right side of history on this one. if you look at it from a scientific perspective. So, that's my analysis of it.
Okay, hold your thoughts there, Richard, because we're opening it up for other people. 888-874-4888. Let's say hello to Monique from New Jersey. Hi, Monique, your turn.
I came down with COVID, and actually this month, and it was bad, but it wasn't as bad as it could have been. I was able to stay out of the hospital. I took quercetin, melatonin, vitamin C, vitamin D, curcumin. One day I was taking curcumin, the other day I was just taking astragalus and zinc all the time, and so I was able to fight it.
Good, and how are you doing today?
Right now I have a little bit of brain fog, but I also had a stroke, so I was kind of scared about that, but when I was able to, go ahead.
Did you have the stroke before or after your COVID?
I had it before COVID in like 2019. I talked to you on Facebook about it, and I was supposed to go through I can't remember her name, but she was telling me to go through your nurse to talk about the things I should do.
So you're now on a holistic or healthy protocol?
Well, I am, but I still take aspirin because I wasn't advised not to take it at this point, but 81 milligrams, I'm not sure about that because I don't want to take it, but at the same time.
Once you have a sickness, once you have an illness, whether it's a stroke, a heart attack, a blood clot, or you have COVID and you're recovering, because there are short-term recoveries and long-term, and my experience has been those who've been on a healthy preventative protocol recover faster, then you have to do this under complementary medical advice, meaning there are really good doctors, medical doctors, and nurses who can guide you. These are some decisions you shouldn't be making on your own. All right?
Yeah. Okay.
But also make sure that there's two different protocols. There's one protocol for stroke recovery. In fact, it's ironic. Richard will tell you, I was just asked to produce an article for a peer-reviewed journal on stroke recovery and dealing with depression, because it's frequently a common factor. And also we're seeing a lot of people with strokes from the COVID vaccine. And so, but they're two separate protocols. Listen to what I'm saying, please. There's a protocol for stroke. There's a protocol for the antiviral and immune modulating qualities of COVID. But the good news is that you've survived COVID. Now you have a very robust antibodies, and you should have your antibodies checked to see how robust they are. Okay?
All right.
And if you haven't spoken with Luann, give her a call. All right?
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, Richard, we only have a minute before WBAI goes away for the news, and we want to be able to deal with this. So I'm struck by the irony that the people we could almost always rely upon to come to the defense of what was happening when we were exploited by, for example, when we were exploited by corporate interest. Think of the veterans who were exposed to Agent Orange and depleted uranium. It would be people within the liberal community, the journalists, and who would expose this and then try to get some congressional hearings to see if we couldn't correct it. It's a long process. But now, the very people who would have been in the front lines of helping us are people who themselves have been censored and attacked. And the people who are there, who are highly intelligent, well-educated, are abrogating their responsibility. Everything is groupthink. I mean, what you hear on CNN, you'll hear on MSNBC, you'll hear on all the NPR. It's as if someone, somewhere within the Washington consensus is saying, this is how we want you to answer today on this particular issue. And we see this across all different issues that they're handling, not just COVID. And And that's dangerous because a lot of people are losing faith in the people that they once felt would stand up with integrity. And now many of those voices, especially at the mainstream media, are going in just the opposite direction. They're defending the CIA. They're defending our foreign policy adventures. They're defending the Pentagon. They're defending everything we're doing wrong. Your thoughts, please.
Well, as you were speaking, the one example that really came up to me is actually Bobby Kennedy. I mean, before Bobby Kennedy got involved really in the whole vaccine debate, but before that, he was one of the champions of environmental issues, you know, clean water and clean the rivers, the water keepers, and the anti-nuclear power and all. And so he was a darling of the same people now that are attacking him, you know. And I mean, this is just another example of this kind of hypocrisy that's just really now pervading the left, you know. And these words don't even apply anymore in some respects, you know. In the case, like, here's Bobby Kennedy, a lifetime liberal Democrat. And but now, I mean, who's listening to him? The right. The right is here on the right now. He would never have been before, you know. So, but there are those liberal outlets, media outlets that, you know, that are still, they're dealing with the COVID and pandemic and with the government policies and the vaccines and the drugs and all from a more independent and impartial perspective. But interesting enough, those are not, most of them are not American. It's more a lot of the liberal outlets in other countries, particularly Canada and Europe, like Global Research, you know, the American
Yes.
RT, covert action. But then you have the Strategic Cultural Foundation, New Oriental Review, you know, Great Games India, Asia Times, the Middle East Eye, or Middle Eastern Reports. These are overseas. And there seems to be a lot more integrity in the liberal wings overseas in foreign countries than in America. We've just become, it's just rubbish now in the U.S.
And this is just the latest, quote, Canadian public health report reflects increased heart condition side effects of 12 to 17-year-old males as vaccination rates increase. And then it goes through the numbers. And these numbers are increasing at a dramatic rate. Myocarditis, which is an inflammation of the heart muscle, myocardium, and the inflammation can reduce your heart's ability to pump and cause rapid or abnormal heart rhythms, arrhythmias. And unfortunately, this trend follows a presentation that was made during the FDA's hearing in September. We played that clip for the audience here. So many academic institutions and athletic organizations are requiring vaccination as a condition of participation, and this puts increased pressure upon teens and young adults to take the vaccine despite any concerns of side effects. You see, since there's no transparency, since the VAERS system is voluntary and not mandatory, since we know from whistleblower nurses repeatedly at different places around the United States saying, oh, it was too much of a hassle to write down any of the side effects, well, and or the doctor said, well, it couldn't be from the vaccine, so we just dismissed all these. Well, who knows then the actual number of deaths? Dr. Rose on this program, if you remember 2 weeks ago, said it's about 203,000 dead Americans. Now, if she is correct, that's medical genocide, because then you got a couple million who are injured, and many of those will not survive because many are life-ending conditions they have. So if you have no transparency and you do not have a desire to tell the truth and do not have an open, honest dialogue where people who are mainstream pro-vaccine scientists, including Nobel Prize winners, want to share their views and show that something they believe that you're promoting is wrong. We all want the same thing. We all want to survive COVID. We want others to survive COVID. But the way we go about it and just saying, this is it, you don't do anything except the vaccines, that is a monotheistic philosophy that is now we're seeing is deadly, and they were wrong. Everything they said, go back to normal, wrong. this is how many people have died from COVID. Wrong. This is the best treatment when a person stays at home until you can no longer stay at home. Then you go to ICU and get intubated. Wrong. And, you know, giving him remdesivir as the a drug of choice by Anthony Fauci with a high fatality rate. Wrong. And so the nurses and doctors are frustrated. And people talk. You know, so anyhow, until we have honesty, transparency, openness, and a dialogue, there will be voices speaking out. Richard Gale, thank you, and all of you for listening. Have a nice day.